Welcome everybody to today's webinar. Great to have everybody here. Now, as you can see, we're doing a webinar tonight on doing business in China. I don't know whether any of you know or not, but I've just come back from China. We just spent, a week or so over there with some of the Platinums, which was a lot of fun, I've got to tell you. Came back with a little bit of a croaky throat though, but that's now going. And it was amazing to actually go through, what's happening over there. It was a big eye opener, and it was something that, I found inspiring, and just to be able to see the sheer size of what's going over there is absolutely amazing. So I thought the best thing to do was share some of that with you this evening. Now, some of you may be in situations where you have businesses and the like that may want to do business in China. That's probably the minority of you, but we'll talk a little bit about that. But also just the ability to be able to buy your raw materials for building and construction and granny flats and modular this and bathrooms and houses and all that kind of stuff, to be able to bring it in directly, because obviously there's that's what happens these days. The amount that's actually manufactured here in Australia is actually very, very slim. So why go through the middle guys when over here in Australia, when we can actually go directly? And once you get the hang of things, and once you get to know some people who can help you out with that kind of thing, it's actually not too hard to bring in, your raw materials out of China. Now, some things are worthwhile and some things are not. And this is where you've really got to know your pricing very, very well. Now, a mate of mine who, I've known him for probably 15, 17 years, yeah, long time, is living over there in China. And he actually helped us out with the whole tour over there and everything else. So I've been so lucky. He's over here in Australia. And I thought, let's grab him while he's here. His name's Joshua Hunt, and he's here with me today. Hey, Josh.
Hi, Dimna. Hello, everybody.
Good to have you here. Now, I might let you kind of run this PowerPoint because you've helped me put it all together, etc. And it's about what you do over there and things like that. So let's first of all introduce Josh Hunt. Who's Josh Hunt?
Well,
and your beautiful wife Paula, of course.
Yeah, well, my wife Paula. We've been doing a lot of business both in Australia and China for many years. And I'll quickly run through some of the things that we've done over the years. We have over 20 years worth of building and development experience here in Australia. We've done everything from renovate houses to build spec homes, to then build out complete suburbs, to then build gated communities, and then hotels and resorts. And so we have a lot of experience from small things to building large complexes here in Australia. So we know the Australian market very well. About 10 years ago, we started to import building materials directly from China, and we established some staff over there. And the purpose of that was really to supply building materials to our own projects. And that's been going very well for a large number of years. But like Dimna said, we now live in China and we build modular buildings in China. There's numbers of other things that we do, but we may come back to those later.
Okay, so here's some of the bits and pieces that you've built over the years.
Yeah, well, we built a resort, and you can see on the screen there just about everything that you see other than the timber in that resort was imported from China. To give you an example, like all of our curtains and carpets were all personally embroidered with our company logos. But then, like to give you an example, our granite bench tops, we had about 100-room hotel here. And the price for our granite benchtops were about $360,000. And the granite benchtops directly out of China cost us about $50,000. So there was a substantial savings in being able to not only up-spec, but also save money on the process. It's like the pool you can see in the shot, or glass-lined mosaic pool. That would be very expensive in Australia, but we're able to import those building materials much cheaper.
So you've got obviously huge experience in importing directly from China and everything else that means. How did you end up living over there?
Well, we a number of years ago, about 5 years ago, we were building the resort and found that not only was it worthwhile to bring building materials in, but it would be fantastic if we could actually bring the finished article in. And so I then took our construction teams to China and we started to build modular buildings in China. And then in 2012, I negotiated a joint venture with Wanhua to actually build a modular manufacturing facility in Yantai.
So that's the company that you're in joint venture with. I mean, this is a company that we went through one of their factories that's under construction at the moment. And guys, you got no idea of the size of this thing. Seriously, it was like 10 kilometres by 10 kilometres big. It also had its own port. And under the ground, you know, there's tunnels or pipes that you can drive a Mack truck through. Like this,
yeah.
This the sheer size of things is just blows you away in Australian standards.
Yeah, well, that manufacturing facility that we took the Platinums to, the first stage of that project is $5 billion.
Jeez.
And we have over 20,000 people per day working on that site.
Unbelievable.
Mm.
So what's this? This is a picture of some of your modular stuff. What do you do there?
So we joined with Wanhua to build a modular manufacturing facility. And you can see in the bottom left-hand corner of your screen there some of our modules lined up. And we're fast becoming a substantial international player in modular. We've got contracts in everywhere from the UK to Africa to Malaysia to Singapore, Russia, all over the place.
I just pulled that off the show there because the questions weren't coming up. This gives you a little bit of an idea of some of your the infrastructure and things that you've got and how the company comes together.
Yeah, well, Wanhua Industrial Group is a large international company. The polyurethane division of Wanhua is the largest polyurethane manufacturer in the world. And we have three plants, one in Ningbo, China, one in Yantai, China, and Borsod Chem in Hungary. This just shows you the structure of the company and where our modular projects company fits in that company.
Okay. All right, we might just leave it like this because it's a little bit easier for me to see the questions and things as they come up.
Sure.
So let's talk about modular, because modular is obviously the thing that it's, you know, we think about being able to bring stuff in out of China, everything from modular bathrooms, granny flats, etc. Obviously, there's been a fair range over the years and our concept of what modular is has changed.
Yeah, well, you know, modular's given a bad rap and often the rap is because of where modular came from. And we looked at the shipping container industry and put a door and a window in it and then called it a modular building. And so a lot of modular, it's sort of where modular was birthed, but the modular buildings that we build today aren't based on shipping containers and nothing to do with shipping containers. The evolution or the engineering of the industry has come a long way.
Hmm. Now, you've got some pretty innovative stuff going on with the way that you package stuff together. I mean, we've got a little video playing here of stuff that comes in a flat pack and, you know, ends up like this massive house.
Yeah, well, we have two different types of modular construction. We have modular cube. And that modular cube has numbers of benefits. We'll look at that shortly. And then we also have our foldable module. And it's got a lot of features in regards to savings and logistics costs while still the hard stuff is done in the factory, all the plumbing and electrical and all of that sort of thing.
While we're talking about plumbing and electrical, that's one of the things that has always been a criticism of bringing stuff in from China, is making sure that everything is Australian standards compliant, because there have been stuff brought in from overseas that you know, says it is and it's not. What do you say about that?
It's very true. You need to be sure that your plumbing and electrical is done correctly. And what we do is, because we build around the world, whenever we're doing a project in a particular jurisdiction like Australia that needs Australian certification, we'll ensure that we actually have plumbers and electricians working in the factory on that project And those guys are the guys that are certifying the plumbing and electrical for that particular project. And so therefore, you know, even working with our certifier to ensure that the buildings are fully certified before they leave our factory.
And I guess you being Australian, you know, got full understanding of all of that kind of stuff and make sure that that happens in the factory.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And you've got a fair few Australians working over there too.
Yes, we do. And when we have an Australian project going through, that gets ramped up so that everything is done to an Australian standard that needs to be done.
Obviously, some of the benefits there are you know, your structural and cost savings in having everything done in the factory rather and lower costs rather than here.
Yeah, well, that's really what it's about. That's the reason you'd manufacture in China, is to save the costs. And so we make sure that it's done properly, because if it's not done properly, you won't be saving any cost. So it's got to be done properly in the factory and then brought out as a completed item. And that's what the modular cube manufacturing system does.
Mm. Okay, and the foldable that we've seen in the little videos coming out. Do you want to talk any more about that?
Well, the foldable is done for the purpose of saving money on logistics. Logistics is a big part of the modular cost, because you've got to get it from one side of the world to the next. The benefit in the foldable building is that we ship a 28 square meter module, and when it arrives, it simply folds out to be a 90 square meter dwelling when it gets to site, and therefore our logistics costs are far cheaper.
And this, the little video here shows it going together. Does it have a roof?
Yep, and the roofs are normally in that module as well. You can see all of the wall panels. They're normally pre-finished internally and externally, and the roof panels are in that module as well.
Hmm. Interesting. Okay, there we go, change the slide. So what have we got here?
So what we got is it gives people an idea of our factory manufacturing process. And so what we do is our pod or our module gets at the start of our assembly line, and then we go through a fit-out process. And the fit-out process can really be done to whatever standard the client requires, whether it's a low-cost house going into Malaysia or Africa, or whether it's a five-star hotel going into Singapore or Australia. The specifications and the finishes through our manufacturing or production line is just changed to be specific for that particular project.
Hmm. And believe me, guys, I've seen these factories. They are huge.
Yeah.
What have we got here? This is obviously a higher spec.
Yeah, and what we have is we got the this is just an example of some of the fit outs that have been done through the factory, just for different projects as they roll through, but predominantly sort of hotel type service department specs.
Okay, what have we got here?
Well, as it goes through that process after it's after a module is fitted out, they're wrapped and then shipped. In the modular cube, because you know it doesn't have the wall systems inside it like the foldable ones, often we'll put the furniture in the modules and we'll even hang the curtains. So therefore, when they're moved to site, there isn't a lot to do because the bathrooms are tiled and plumbed and the electrical's done, the curtains are hung and the furniture's in there, so it's very fast work on site. And so then the modules are wrapped and packed, put on a ship, and then taken to the site. And so you can see in the illustrations on the bottom left hand, that's an Australian project, and the modules arrive on the back of a truck. They're simply unwrapped and put onto a footing. These footings were in the ground before we arrived, but we were assembling about a module an hour. And so therefore, and those modules are fully completed inside. So there's some massive time savings on site by going modular construction versus traditional construction.
So that, like, these are two story that you're putting together there, and how many units is in each one, each building?
Well, this building's double ended two story. There's 825 square meter service apartments in each of those double story modules.
And that went into Australia?
That's out of Chinchilla.
Hmm. Very good.
What we've got next is just an example of some of the different types of projects that we're doing. People don't understand the reach of modular and what it can actually be used for. They just think that it's a converted shipping container in your backyard. But this is something that's happening in Malaysia, low-cost high-rise accommodation. High-rise accommodation modular can be done numbers of different ways. You can do 20 stories quite easily with modular. But there's also a project happening in America that's gone to 67 stories just with some transfer slabs as it worked its way up the building.
So they just crane them in on top?
Yeah, crane them in on top.
And how do they bolt them together, or what do they do?
Well, it depends on the engineering of that particular project, but they can be welded to each other. They can be welded to a core, or they can be bolted. It really does depend on where they are going around the world. The illustration on the page at the moment is to show you that just because you're using a square module, it doesn't mean that your building needs to be square. You can get a lot of articulation. There's a fan type shape, or even the resort on the left hand side, in and out, just gives the building a lot of articulation and movement. Also, we're doing some high volume accommodation. This is a 5,000 bed university accommodation in Malaysia, and the bathrooms and the kitchen area goes as a solid module, but our bedrooms are being shipped to site flat packed, and so therefore we cut down a lot in our logistics, and it keeps the cost of the project low. This is something that the guys saw in their platinum visit. This is a 7,000 square meter three-story office complex. I've got some pictures coming up a little bit later, but this project was manufactured and installed in about a 3-month period, which
for that size is huge. That's amazing.
It's a big building.
Now that doesn't look modular.
No, it doesn't look modular. And the interesting part about it is we've just finished this project. This is a hotel in China, but the facade of a building can really look however you want it to look. You know, I was with some architects in Brisbane last week, and they're saying, well, whether it's tilt-up slab, whether it's a block wall, or whether it's a module, how you dress the external of the building is really up to anyone's interpretation. And so, you know, this one here has got a fake facade on it, but rather than it be block construction, it was modular, but it looks fantastic.
So what is that facade? Is it that foam stuff?
And the foam stuff is polyurethane, which is the core in, the core manufacturing product of Wanhua. So
there you go.
Worked out well. mining camps. We're doing some of this in and around Australia, but also a lot going into the Kazakhstan and Russian regions. The four-bedroom, four-bathroom mining donger is really becoming a thing of the past. We're doing a lot more of these double-story pods with 16 to 18 square meter sort of hotel rooms. The foldable apartments and houses, you can see how this is coming together and how it gets shipped aside in the animation on the screen. And, you know, we're supplying a lot of residential housing to Africa and Malaysia. But the illustrations on the bottom is how we're actually using the same technology but actually building hotel rooms. The one on the left is an 8-person. They sort of share a bathroom. 4 people share a bathroom, but you get a lot of accommodation out of that 190 square meter. But that module actually gets shipped to site in one 2.4 by 12 meter module. And then the one on the right is a executive 20 square meter hotel suites, but very, very cost efficient because the logistics is so low.
So in one container, you get 8 rentable areas.
Yeah, well, that's the one on the left.
8 rentable bedrooms.
Yeah, so the module, which is the size of a standard 40-foot shipping container high cube, but it's not a container, never was. But in that logistics size, that's a 12 square meters per person, but 8 lettable rooms. And so therefore you're getting some very, very good efficiencies from your logistics, and then very good efficiencies by having 8 lettable spaces.
Mm. And with all of the move towards lower costs, smaller housing, all of that kind of stuff, it's you've got to take this stuff further.
Yeah. Well, this one here, the guys that came over saw this. This is a low-cost house that we're sending into Africa, and they just can't believe the Africans can't believe how good it is. They're just not
used. It was good.
Yeah. But this is 47 square meter house, but actually gets shipped to site in a 2.4 wide by 6 meter module, and then folds out into a 47 square meter house.
With all the fit out and everything inside.
Yeah. Yeah. So the bathrooms are in. The kitchen is flat packed because it's in part of the fold out, but all of the goods are there. The furniture isn't in there. We can't fit the furniture in. It needs to go separately, but the complete house is in that module.
It's pretty good.
Mm. You know, we can also do luxury houses. We're actually building this house for one of the big bosses of OneWire at the moment.
Can we just go back to this one? Can we get this one in Australia?
You can get that in Australia.
Because that's obviously a nice little granny flat in somebody's backyard.
Yeah, well, they like it under 50 square metres. And granny would love having 47 square metres. That's quite a spacious apartment. And yeah, they're for sale, but also for rent, which may be something that we'll talk about later.
All right. Very good. That obviously doesn't look very modular at all, but.
No, and quite executive and not very cheap.
Not very cheap. These ones?
Aged care. Aged care is a massive market internationally. And our friends at Thompson Adset, we've been working very closely with those guys. They're architects right throughout Australia, and they've got many offices around the world specialising in aged care. And we've built this aged care module that's currently sitting in the Brisbane Thompson Adset car park. But we're getting a lot of traction with building modular aged care facilities. And it's going to be a big part of our future because aged care, the construction of aged care homes is becoming very expensive, and this is a much cheaper way to get that aged care facility up and built very quickly and cost efficiently.
And obviously it complies with all of the standards for disability access and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and that's where Thompson Adset have been fantastic. You can see the picture of the bathroom on the right. You know, they've just got to have certain size access and open spaces. And so we've been very much guided by them as industry professionals in the space to make sure that the modules work very well for disability and aged care.
What's this little one?
We set up a manufacturing line for the flats. Now, flats is there's an Australian inventor, and we're now his manufacturer in China. But that building,
so it's not just misspelling flat.
Yeah, no, it's not. It's sort of done on purpose. But what that is, that building comes apart in the middle, and it's two halves, and it folds down. The building completely folds into two halves, and then six halves go into one standard 20-foot shipping container. And so what it means is that you actually get one 20-foot shipping container delivered to site, and then you pull out of that six halves, which make three of those complete buildings. And they're used for emergency accommodation, you know, anywhere you need accommodation very quickly. They're quite light, and so therefore a 20-foot container with three complete buildings in it can actually be helicoptered into remote locations.
So this is more for, you know, earthquakes and, you know, refugee camps and things like that. These couldn't be used in Australia.
They can be used in Australia. They are an Australian standard, but you're not going to live in one of these things. It's really disaster relief, emergency accommodation, or even sort of, you know, temporary site offices. But we're supplying these into South Africa, South African mining camps. It's very good for, like, if you want to move that camp, because you can fold the buildings up, put them back in the shipping containers and move them to the next place.
So there's no bathroom or cooking facilities or anything. It's just a room.
It's a room. It's an open space inside there.
All right.
So here's just some of the benefits of modular. One of the major benefits is the speed over traditional construction. And the reason for that is you can actually make a head start. You know, once your DA comes out, you could actually start building modules in the factory. And by the time your operational works comes out and you've got your footings in, your buildings can basically be at your site ready to install. And so therefore you can get a massive increase in speed through the construction process. The environmental damage, this is very important in sensitive ecological sites, but also very important when you come to inner city sites. You know, we're doing some stuff in Singapore at the moment. The congestion of the traffic is very bad. And they say that modular, you have about 80% less deliveries to site by using modular, because you don't have tradespeople coming and going, all of the individual materials, it all comes pre-finished in one module. Better quality finishes, and then you should have cost savings as well. We just put it together a bit of a review. We'll flick through this pretty quickly. This is some of the things that we did last year. We built a three-story office complex for 1,000 staff. The foundation went down in August. You can see in September that the modules started arriving on site. This was done in two stages. It was the modular structure and the local fit out. So in October, we were up to the third story. By the time we hit November, the structure was cladded and internal fit out was happening. And by the time we hit December, the project was completely finished.
That's just the speed. And obviously in any construction, you know, speed means money. As soon as you can get people in, the more you get refinanced, you get your project, you got revenue, all changes.
Yeah, well, I've always said as a developing is a running race. And basically you're trying to outrun the bank before the bank eats you. And so
that's not a good attitude, Josh.
Speed is very important. You know, you can certainly make plenty of money in property, but you need to make sure that you get it done in a certain time frame. Just like you managing your costs, it's one of the things that you need to manage very carefully. This is the little project that we've done out at Chinchilla. You can see that this is the structural steel on the left-hand side is actually the ceiling panels, the modules going together, and then the internal fit-outs, and then all of the services being fitted. So the air conditioning and the hot water and all of those things all happens in the factory. All the final defecting, internal and external defecting, putting the furniture in, wrapping and packing the modules, shipping them and then sending them to site, and then the installation on site.
And that's the finished product inside. So they're very nice inside.
Yeah, 4.5-star finish.
That picture there doesn't do it justice either. I mean, that looks pretty, you know, bland on the outside, but we actually went through those when we were over in China, or a demo of.
Yeah.
And they actually look quite stylish on the outside.
Yeah, I'd like to have some more finished photos of the site. We'll do that in the next little while.
Well, obviously we've got the website up there for anybody who wants to contact Josh and talk about any of the prefab type stuff. While you're looking at that, we might just go and have a look at some of the questions that have come through. First question here says, what materials are used on the exterior?
The way that we manufacture, you could really have any external finish that you want. We've actually done one in our press that we actually have a full external granite wall. Most of the ones that you see is either a fiber cement sheet or an MGO board. And that's because fiber cement sheet and MGO gives us external fire ratings. It gives us good, weatherproofing. And so you can really use whatever you want as far as both the internal and the external wall finishes. But it depends on what type of building that you're trying to build and what you need to achieve from a certification point of view.
Next question here comes in and says, do you send people to Australia to unfold and build the modular building, or are there people here who know how to do it?
A bit of both. We have some local builders that we work with that are familiar with what we do and how we do it. We also have different contracts. For instance, we're building a hotel in Christchurch, and we're sending about 8 of our team over to assist in the installation of the modules on the site.
Next question says, what architects were you meeting with? I'm interested to discuss applying it to a townhouse site.
We've done a lot of work with Thompson Adset. The chairman of Thompson Adset's become a very good friend. They've sent they have hundreds of staff, but they've sent a lot of their key management over to our factory, and they have a very good understanding of what we do from a modular perspective. But there's a lot of architects out there that are looking to move into modular space.
Lisa just asked a question. She said, what's the lifespan of the finished product?
The lifespan of our finished product, we aim for 50 years. We're doing projects in Kazakhstan at the moment, and they require it to be a 30-year lifespan minimum. So it should last as long as a traditional built building. One of the questions that they ask in Malaysia is, can you renovate? And it's no problem. So you can get in and you can renovate your structure just like you would a traditionally built house.
Sean's just asked, with cost, do you have people that can put them up all right around Australia?
Yep, we can coordinate people that can assist in the installation and delivery, all of those things.
Jodie's asked about pricing here in Australia.
Pricing is a very varied question. It depends on what you're building, and like, for instance, it costs a lot more to build a hotel than to build a house, and the reason is that every 20 square meters of a hotel, there's a bathroom. As a rough rule of thumb, because people like the question to be answered, we don't focus too much on residential. And the reason is because residential in Australia is really quite a competitive market, and they do very well at you know, pricing them competitively. Our Act factory prices start at around $750 a square metre. And go up to $1,500 a square metre, even higher if you're building a 30-storey building.
And spec, obviously, changes that.
Spec, and then how many bathrooms and all of those things. It's a very...
Tristan's asked some questions there about duplexes, triplexes, quadplexes, and do you have a 3x2-storey townhouse product? Well, you do.
Yeah, we do. You can have a bit of a look on our website at some of our residential. If you're building building a residential product in a major city, you won't find much cost savings in building modular. It's mainly speed, because residential is so cost effective.
Another question here on environmental testing and Australian standards.
We put a lot of work into the Australian standards. You know, all of our stuff, you know, before a building leaves China, we ensure that the certifier has everything they need from an Australian tick off point of view, so that, you know, the building isn't going to have problems from an Australian standards point of view. And also, you know, what energy rating, you know, our glass, what energy efficiencies our glass doors and windows actually provide. You know, the thermal insulations of our wall panelling, all of those, we try and provide all of those.
There's a question here about warranties. How would you compare to other Australian builders with warranties and things like that?
They're very similar. Like, we offer as a factory a 7-year structural warranty, and then also a 12-month warranty and defects period. So it's very, very similar to traditional build.
Little question here on the cost of the 47 square metre, 2-bedroom granny flat. We're going to answer that shortly, aren't we? We'll come to that one later.
Yeah, we can come to that later.
typically, how much, we've answered the questions there, basically on a square metre basis. Does the internal finish have plasterboard without, what's that say?
Without adjoining strips.
Oh, yeah.
It's an interesting question, because if you're going to use plasterboard, and you find a lot of modular people won't actually do plasterboard with a flush, like a normal house would, you know, where you'll flush set the joints. And the reason is because you've got to pick this building up, put it on a truck, put it on a boat, take it off a boat, put it on a truck. You know, there's a lot of twisting and movement of this, that those cracks are the first cracks that actually happen. And that's why you find a lot of modular manufacturers actually like to have a joint that can take some movement rather than flush setting them with a thin piece of plaster. And so we do flush setting, but we try not to do it wherever we can.
It's a question here on maintenance, and in particular, do they require painting, etc.?
We've got some fairly interesting products. Like, we're using a board that is a paint-free board, and it's got a really good long life, and it's almost like the baked enamel. It's a beautiful board, but then if you do damage it by driving your car into the side of your house or something crazy, you then still have to paint it, so you'd have to stand
it. Only a 14-year-old son would do that.
You've got one of those.
I have. Drive the cruiser into the front of the house.
Yeah. Yeah, don't teach your kids to learn how to drive around your house. It's not a very smart thing to do.
We've got 54 acres and he had to run into the house.
Yeah, it was a nice, easy thing to see.
All right. Banks, are they receptive to modular homes?
There's no problem with banks and modular. The problem is with banks and releasing progress claims to building in a factory that's not on the site that they control. We've done a lot of work with our local banks, and we're a very substantial company. And if a local bank is prepared to put down a letter of credit or something like that, we'll fund it till it actually gets on site to get around those issues.
Yeah, it's always going to be a problem with any kind of modular, regardless of whether, you know, Josh is doing them overseas or whether they're here in Australia, et cetera. It's a problem you're going to have. You know, I guess the cost savings and the time savings still make it worthwhile fiddling with the banks to see what you can do and what are the security you've got to put up against it. Do they value up at the end as much as any other, I would imagine?
Yeah, it's not normally any different as far as the valuation. The problem with the question is that what's happened in the past is modular has been to a substandard or different, where you can build modular these days and you really have no idea whether it's been built modular or built traditional construction, and so therefore shouldn't make a difference to that valuation.
Hugh wants to know, have you thought about putting them on a pontoon as houseboats?
You should talk to Ian about that, because that's his little pet project. And I'll let Ian put it on a boat. I don't mind what you do with the module after you pick it up.
Now, we're talking about the piers. Do you normally just put them on steel piers, or you put them on concrete or what?
That really comes down to the site. Obviously, soil types are quite different across the world. But there's no problem about whether you actually want to put them on a pier, whether you actually want to put them on a footing, whether you want to put them on concrete strips or put it on a slab. It doesn't make much difference to us, and it's really what's best for the site.
Ali's asked a question here about modular kitchens and bathrooms for existing houses. We've got an answer to that. At the moment, no, we're talking about full projects, but we've got a little bit of an answer that you can perhaps go through another channel there to be able to access that very shortly. So just hang on with that one. We've still got a lot more of the presentation to go. So we'll just do a few more questions before we move on. Cyclone ratings?
Yep. Like cyclone ratings, there is a number of things that's required in a building to get a cyclone rating, and we can implement any of those requirements to ensure that we hit cyclone rating. We actually have done a project where we got cyclone rating D. That's not a problem.
And how long does it take to actually get them here? Do you have stock in Australia?
We have displays in Australia. We don't keep stock. Buildings are made to order, and there's no difference as far as what we're concerned as well.
And do you have boarding house designs?
Yeah, boarding house. If you have a look at the website, you'll see some interesting products. Whether they're boarding house, hotels, you know, there's a lot of similar products there.
Colin's obviously said he's a builder there and wants to get involved. Just contact Josh through the website. You've got the website there on screen. Termites, how do you go with them?
Termites eat timber. We don't use a lot of timber. We don't use any timber. Timber is not good from a fumigation perspective when you bring it in. So therefore, we try not to go near it. So termites don't eat steel.
Though the sound is going up and down, that's all right. And the last question before we move on, double glazed windows.
Yeah, we all of our windows are double glazed, often argon filled and tinted. Makes for a very high quality, like the thermal insulation and the privacy and the sound insulation is much better with double glazed doors and windows.
Now, what have we got here? Because you've actually got another way that that you know people can access, particularly things like the granny flats and those sorts of things.
Yeah, we have a joint venture company that does building rentals. The purpose of this company is just to rent a building rather than buy it. You can buy it at a later stage, but it's not leasing, it's rentals. The reason you may consider renting a building rather than buying it, we could go into that a little bit later, but normally in the past you can't rent things like a hotel. You know, you can rent a side office, you can rent a ablution block, but you can't rent things like a house, you can't rent things like childcare centres. And so we have a bit of a point of difference in our market that we can rent you a hotel, we can rent you a granny flat, we can rent you a house, or we can rent you a childcare centre.
Well, how does that work?
Well, basically, a client would apply to our Hong Kong joint venture company to say, hey, I want to rent a building. You go through an application process. We then get those buildings manufactured. We deliver and install them onto your site. And there's an agreed minimum term that you can rent that building for.
Like what kind of term?
Well, the minimum term is 24 months. The general requirement for this is 24 months rental minimum. You've got to pay 5 months in advance on that, and that's because there's a lot of soft costs that are unrecoverable for us as a company.
Rentals, as in putting it on site.
On site, all of the shipping, and so we pay all of that. Rental security, well, obviously you've got to be a half-decent company and have some proof that you can afford to pay the rent. But at the end of the term, you can purchase those buildings. If you want to rent them for 2 years or you want to rent them for 10 years, basically what we do is at the end of the term, the buildings are valued, whatever the value is, and that's valued by an independent market valuer. That's the price that you pay for the building.
Okay, so obviously construction is something that once you get them on site, the value of the property usually increases in value because they've now got buildings on there, much more than what it's actually cost you to get them there. So by renting them initially, you've got the opportunity to get them on site, get some revenue coming in shared, obviously, with the rental company, with a view to at the end of it then sharing the upside in the profit as well.
One of the big problems that a lot of people are having in Australia, whether you're doing student accommodation, whether you're doing mining accommodation, and even other accommodation like, you know, sometimes around hospitals and these type of things, where you have, or hotels, where you have individual users of that product and can't secure a long-term lease, is because that's not secure, the banks don't want to finance them. What renting a building does, that gives you the ability to put a building on your site, be generating an income, and you could go to the bank 2 years later and say, it's now proven, here's a track record of the last 2 years worth of income that we've generated from the site. And then that would actually give you the ability to borrow money.
Obviously better in larger scale complexes, but has applications otherwise as well.
Absolutely. Some of the buildings that we rent that you can see on the screen here is modular hotels. It's a fairly rare thing that you could rent a hotel.
Yeah, absolutely. Childcare?
Yeah, childcare. We've designed a 450 square meter childcare centre that is getting a lot of traction. So that actually comes to site in six different buildings and have a 450 square meter childcare centre.
So what size piece of land do you need for that?
Well, the site coverage is about 450 square metres, but you probably need at least 1,000 square metres to have that size by the time you put car park and kids' play area.
Mm-hmm. And that's what it looks like.
No, this one is a school.
Oh, yeah.
And so we're leasing schools to the UK government. Maybe they don't have any money, but...
maybe we'll have to do that here too.
Yeah, maybe the Australian government need to lease some schools as well. These are our this can be single or double story. There was ask about whether we do sort of duplexes. These are a 90 square meter three bedroom. They could be four bedroom or three bedroom and a study, two bathroom, little houses. Very popular in Malaysia. This is what we were talking about earlier about our 47 square meter single bedroom, two bedroom, single bathroom. It could be a granny flat.
So what could we rent that for, or lease that for?
The rent of that is $200 a week.
Okay, so if we could get 250 or 200 or 300 and 350 or something like that dollars a week, we could rent this, stick it in our backyard, collect 100 or 150 bucks a week thereabouts, don't have to pay for it, don't have to finance it, and then in 2 years' time get it valued, refinance, and pay you out.
Yeah, you could. Yeah. Either that or tell us to come and pick it up.
We'll tell you to come pick it up.
Mm.
Because you still own the building.
Yeah.
You'd still have to go through approvals to get services and everything else connected.
Yeah, and that depends on where you are around Australia. Like, you know, I believe in New South Wales you can have a granny flat as of right in your backyard under 50 square metres. I think you'd need to – I'm not sure what you've got to do with the services, but I don't think that they can knock you back.
In the other areas, if it's your PPR, you've got more flexibility there as well because if you're living there, the rules are more liberal than if it's a rental property.
Mm. We also do another 47 square meter one, which is
Is it on the next slide?
No. It's actually two 25 square meter rooms, ensuite rooms. And that can be a great one. If you're really just looking at room or revenues, it's the same size building, and 25 square meters is quite a generous size room.
Does that have a little kitchenette in it? Yeah,
Yeah, it could have a little kitchenette.
A little dining room or something. Yeah. And that's a bathroom each?
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that one.
A little bit more expensive, but different. Now, this is quite tight, but used for mining. They're about a 15 square meter room. I think they are about six bathrooms, six bedrooms. Okay for short-term stay. So the benefits of renting lowers your capital costs, you know, no long-term commitments required, rental payments are a tax deduction, and you can purchase after you've got proven cash flow on the property.
Hmm. Interesting concept. So how do we go about that?
Well, on the screen there's some contact details. The best thing would be to send an email to the team at AB Capital, and then they can help process the application.
I might just take some questions on that one because I'm sure we will have some before we move on. Let me just move this around a little bit. The first question there is, how long does it take to build, etc. Three bedroom?
Roughly they take about 3 to 4 days to assemble on site. And they're all pretty much the same because it's just the outer perimeter walls that you're putting in place.
And acoustics?
Acoustics are very good because our wall panels are polyurethane filled, and polyurethane is one of the best insulators in the world. And so you get very good thermal sound, and our doors and windows, our windows are double glazed.
I've got a question here from Hugh. You've got difficult questions tonight, Hugh. You got, why does the insert picture show a left-hand shake? What's a left-hand shake?
I have no idea. Hugh, you might have to give us more information on that one.
Don't know what a left-hand shake is. Okay, the next question here is, can you attach verandas?
Yeah, there's no problem with any of that. The challenge is sometimes getting those in the same module, but when we're doing a group of them together, sometimes we might send an additional shipping container full of additional things like verandas or furniture to complete the process.
Okay, so let's move on a little bit. Let's now talk about actually doing business in China. Now, it's probably something that would only affect a minority of my students listening, because most of people are, you know, into property here. But a few of them could be interested in the concept. And it's good for everybody to actually listen to anyway, because it's just mind-blowing, the size of the place and the opportunities.
Yeah, we love China. We love the dynamic of China, the challenges of China. It's just an unbelievable place to actually do business. I'll flick through some of the slides here just so that you can see. You know, people have a very different perspective of China. I know that when I was growing up, I did not want to go to China. It was this fear that I had in my head, but China's changed a lot. You know, some people think that China is just a whole heap of rice fields and a lot of people. You know, some people think of China as the massive building boom. The amount of construction that's happening in China is just staggering. Other people think about China and their smog problem. Well, there is a smog problem in China, but it's not always there. There are some days that it's bad and some regions that it's bad. Other places is not so bad. The truth is China is all of these things, but it's much more. You know, China is unbelievably beautiful. Even though Dimpner and Brian went to have a look at the wall and couldn't see it the day that they arrived, sometimes you can see it and it looks beautiful.
Sometimes it's not pouring down rain and freezing cold.
Yeah, and often in northern China it is. You know, this is another beautiful spot in the Vietnam and Chinese border. It is an absolutely stunning place. The thing is that you need to realize when doing business in China is the culture and the heritage of the place. It is so deep, you know, 3,000 to 5,000 years of culture. We can't even comprehend that from an Australian perspective when we're only a couple of hundred years old. But these guys have thousands of years of cultural heritage. And so therefore, they're quite ingrained in some of their ways of thinking and the ways that they do things. But as you're Platinum saw, China is full of some amazing cities. You know, China is developing faster than any other country on earth. And some of the cities that it's filled with are dynamic and amazing cities.
That's true.
They used to say that it was the slow road to China, but now China's got the fastest growing economy in the world. The slow road to China no longer exists. So if you want to do business in China, you need to know who you're dealing with. And we've been doing it for some time now. And the modern Chinese are very different to what the old Chinese used to look like and the way that they think. You know, the modern Chinese are technologically savvy. They're motivated to succeed and they want the best that the world has got to offer. And so it's very interesting when you understand what the Chinese, who they're becoming and who they are, it's a very dynamic place to do business. It's interesting from a Western perspective when we think about China and it's in a developing country. We think that when they develop that they'll become Western. And this is very, very wrong. You know, the culture and the heritage of China is so deep that they want the best that the world can deliver. But don't be fooled in thinking that when they develop, they'll become Western. The Chinese will remain Chinese, but they just want the best that the West has got to offer. Mm. You know, it's interesting. There's a lot of misconceptions. You know, you see the Chinese go to the beach with these fully covering, they look ridiculous. But often we think it's because they have sensitive skin. But the interesting thing is that the Chinese like to look white because dark-skinned Chinese are people that work in the field and they don't like to look like the common workers, and so they actually like to be white. You know, you see people with masks on and they think because the pollution's bad. Well, the truth is they wear masks because they don't want to spread disease if they're not feeling very well because the country, there's so many people. The fundamental thing is the Chinese love China and they're very proud of their country and it's where they want to be. But they've just got a lot of money now. That's why they're buying up the rest of the world because they just like to spread their risk, just like most people do. So the question is, for your group, why do business in China?
And let me just explain that too. That's just not about you taking products to China. This is about you going over there and buying stuff and bringing it back over here, you know, and just being able to understand who you're negotiating with and understand, you know, how they think and all of this kind of stuff.
People want to do business in China for many different reasons. Some people want to buy direct from China. The truth is that if you're not buying direct from China, you're buying from somebody who is buying from China.
That's right.
Because we don't have much manufacturing here in Australia. And most of the things are built in China. And so you could choose to do business in China just by buying direct and chop out a couple of middlemen. You'll find that you can often get the same product but save quite a lot of money. Other people want to manufacture in China, and there are all the big manufacturers in the world basically have manufacturing in China. And I'm not sure if this is of great interest to you know your listeners, but China is a market that should be considered. It is one of the largest markets in the world, and you should think about in the future selling into China. It's interesting, a survey was done of 450 US companies saying that they're more profitable in China than what they are in America. The margins in China are better than the margins in America. And plus, it's the world's largest market. It's unbelievable. There's an illustration here to try and help you understand the size of the market. Here's a map of Sydney. And about 100 kilometers across this diameter of this Sydney, there's 4.5 million people. And so the question is asked that how big would this city be at the same density of Sydney if we injected the Chinese population? And here's a picture of how big that city would be if we put the Chinese population at the same density of Sydney.
Wow.
That you could drive from Melbourne to Darwin and be a third of the way across this new city at the same population of Sydney. That's how many people there are in China.
Amazing, isn't it?
You know, the opportunities in China for web-based businesses, they say that China has the largest penetration in the world of online users. More than 800 million people in China have access to the internet and use it regularly.
Wow.
The fastest growing economy in the world. Just reasons to do business in China. James Packer, he's a very wealthy Australian that's doing business in China. And he said the next biggest revolution to hit the world after the internet is the movement of the Chinese into the middle class. And the middle class is getting a lot of money in China, and you just got to somehow position yourself to be in that market. It's interesting, a car in China is more expensive than a car in Australia.
Wow.
A BMW is normally 30 to 40% more expensive in China than what it is in Australia. And the interesting thing is that car is made in China. So BMW are making their cars in China, but they're more expensive. I think they're making good profit.
I think so.
So anyway, it's just a market that if you're interested in expanding your business, you should consider. It requires a lot of commitment, a lot of determination, a lot of patience, but it really is a dynamic place to do business.
So you actually have got a facility you have set up with your daughter to help people do business in China, haven't you?
Well, we understand how difficult it is to do business in China. We've done it for a lot of years. You can buy directly from Chinese factories. That's one way you can do business in China. You can use buyer's agents. There's a lot of buyer's agents in China. Or you could set up a Chinese business yourself, a Chinese company. There's a lot of challenges in setting up a Chinese company in China. Minimum paid up capital is 100,000 US. You know, you've got to have a business. you've got to pay rent. You pay rent 12 months in advance in China. There's a lot of costs in setting up a business. So yeah, we've set up a company that helps people do business in China.
Is your beautiful daughter, Jessica?
Yes, my daughter Jessica. She sort of lives both in China and in Australia between the two, helping Western business people do business in China.
So what does that mean?
Well, what it basically does, well, she has a furniture business where she puts furniture packages, a lot of hotel furnitures. But the main thing that she does is fusion. And fusion is, she explains it better than what I do, but it's basically a employment services business. So what you do is you hire staff, and you can hire them for an hour a week. You can hire them for 40 hours a week. But these staff are all English speaking and they work for you. And so therefore they're on very strict contracts in regards to no taking commissions from suppliers, no taking kickbacks from suppliers. But it's a way that you can instantaneously have staff in China that work for you, whether you want to buy direct from manufacturers, whether you want to sell into China, whether you just want to reduce your staffing costs. It's a facility that you can utilize.
So that's everything from like bookkeeping through to, you know, I want to buy 15 vanity units.
That's right. Anything that you want to do in China. And you can get remote internet staff. But working in China, if they're not in China, they're as good as useless, because China is a very closed market. You need staff in China to work in China. And so Yantai Fusion, or Fusion Yantai, is a company based in China that's owned by Australians, owned and run by my daughter, that is an employment services business, or whether you want to have a virtual office, whether you want to have phone numbers that are answered by your business in China, all of those services are available through Fusion. You just simply employ different staffing levels depending what your company requires.
Wow.
Hmm. So, you know, there's, oops, sorry. Like you said, there's bookkeeping, there's graphic design, there is construction drafting.
We have even things like, you know, getting your plans done or getting the renders done up, like the, you know, the architectural layouts of how things are going to look if you're going to market your, you know, your townhouse before it's built and that sort of thing.
Yeah, we have numbers of draft people in the office there that can help you with your plans and your 3D renders or your bookkeeping, or whether you want to have serviced offices there. All of those things are available.
So you can actually have somebody answer the phone, your company over there, if you went that far.
Yeah, you could have, like we said, you could have hourly staff, or you could have staff on a full-time basis that man your office. And so it's a way to break into the Chinese market very cost-efficiently, very low impact, yeah.
Hmm.
So the way that it works is you basically sign up as a member of Fusion. It costs you $100 a month, and then you just pay as you go, whether you want someone for an hour or someone for 40 hours. She also has an introductory package if you don't want to sign up on a monthly basis. You pre-buy a certain amount of hours and 30 hours for $500, and you can suck it and see how it goes, see how it works for you.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
And there's our Jess.
That's Jess.
So, I mean, obviously China's got a huge amount of potential at a lot of different angles. And something that I've found is that you need somebody on the ground there. You need somebody who can talk to the Chinese, who is Chinese, who can negotiate, who can, you know, get down and make sure even that your containers are being packed safely so that you can, you know, that they get over here and everything's where it's supposed to be, all of that sort of thing, which it just makes such a massive, massive difference to have somebody on the ground. And that's why I was so pleased to have Josh here today to come on the line and share all this stuff with you, because, you know, if you're going in cold, it just makes it too hard most of the time. You need some contact. You need somebody over there helping you. Now, I've got a few more questions here. Louis has written in and he said, are they fire rated? Yes, yeah, so, we've answered that one.
Yeah, that's most of our modules are made with a MGO board or a fibre cement sheet, which comes with fire rated properties.
This was the shake question. Are they using their left hand to shake? I don't know. You must have a picture reverted, do you?
No, I think that you're actually asking a question about whether they eat with a particular hand. This is more an Indian thing. No, they shake hands with their right hand. I hope that was the question that you're asking. That's my answer anyway.
Don't know that one there, Hugh. Okay, well, there you go. Thank you so much for coming in and sharing all of that. As I say, there's so many different levels there that you can come in and explore China, because it's definitely worthwhile to either bring your stuff in for your projects, to have a virtual assistant over there doing everything for you from stuff back over here like your bookkeeping and that kind of stuff, or even being able to source materials or organize this or organize that, whatever it might be in China. And then, of course, all the modular stuff. Stuff's very exciting. This is definitely the way of the future. It is the way, that building will be done in the future. It is the way that we have to start thinking. We have to start designing with modular in mind, because that is definitely the way our building industry is going to go.
Yeah, I think modular forms a massive part of the building industry into the future, just purely because you can get so many more efficiencies from it.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Josh. Thank you for sharing with everybody. Thank you guys for being on the line. And I'll be back again to talk to you in a couple of weeks' time with the Q&A with Ian. So thanks heaps, guys, and we'll catch you next time. Bye for now.
Bye.